Jayama. So we are understanding the difference between knowledge and ignorance. These terms have a different meaning than what we are normally accustomed to believe what they mean. We all believe we are knowledgeable people. And there is a little story of two stories actually. One is of Ishwarchand Vidyasagar. He was called Vidyasagar because he had a lot of knowledge. And he goes to meet Sri Ramakrishna Paramahans, and as he goes to meet him, he says, he does pranam to Sri Ramakrishna Paramahans. Now Sri Ramakrishna Paramahans had hardly studied, probably till 6th standard or something. So with his inimitable humor, he says, "Oh, Sagar, Vidyasagar, no? Sagar has come to meet a stream, Nalla." So Vidyasagar replied, "You know, when the stream is filled with the ocean, lower ocean, upper ocean, then where is this little Sagar's value?" There is another little story of, and often people ask for that identity card. Not identity card is required sometimes, but they require your, what is it, biodata card. I have always found it the funniest thing in the world. It's not a declaration of what you know. It's a declaration of the limitations of what you know. So once someone went to meet Anandamayi Ma, and the person who was the secretary asked the person that what do I tell her, who has come to meet? So as is the habit, the man took out his biodata card and handed over. "Please give this to Anandamayi Ma." Now there are several things there written there, you know, people write like MBBS, MD, D.Litt, God knows what all. Sometimes people write triple PhD, which means you didn't pass in first time. That's all. So he took, and he didn't know how to say all these things. So he simply told Anandamayi Ma, "Ma, koi vidwan aapse milne aaye hain." So she made a remark, "Avidya ki nagri mein vidwan kahan se aa gaya? Who is this vidwan in the citadel of ignorance or avidya?" So these terms have a very specific meaning in Indian thought, spiritual thought, and a very profound meaning. Actually, understanding these two terms itself is very liberating. So ignorance is knowledge of all kinds of things may or may not be there. But what is missing in ignorance is knowledge of the one. When we don't know the one, then we may know everything. We may have degrees, we may have all kinds of things, but still it is ignorance. A person may be a very good doctor, by all means, but if he doesn't know the one truth behind it, divine or Brahman, whatever we want to call it, then it's still avidya. And what is vidya? Vidya is knowledge of the one. So the question arises, is there a connection between the two? Very legitimate question. And many people don't care to see the distinction. They just say, "Well, we do our meditation to find God, to seek vidya." But as to these things, they belong to a different order of reality. We come back to Vyavarik and Advait Atmabodh. That for this world, we have to act according to the requirements of this world. So you have, for example, if there is an illness, you'll go to a doctor. And perhaps maybe you'll blame it on karma. God knows, doctor's karma or your karma. Many times it's doctor's karma because you give a drug which has a side effect. You know, karmic theory has many strange kickbacks, many strange things behind it. So basically, is there a connecting link? Because Sri Aurobindo is creating a synthesis. Is there a link between the one and us, or is this that we are simply going through this cycle of karma and rebirth with all the forces, and there is the one reality beyond watching over us, maybe time to time intervening? But then how did this come into existence? So it's a very profound existential question, not only existential. it has an implication even in intervention in our everyday life. Because if avidya has emerged out of the one, then there is possibility not just of transit from avidya to vidya, but of transforming all the different businesses of this world, all the different knowledge systems into the knowledge which comes from the one. We can take a few examples of, you know, we have, for instance, in India, we see this Mahabharata, they are doing Shastra Vidya. So what are they doing? They are putting the arrow, as we have shown. Then he's invoking Agni and the power of Agni. And then suddenly the arrow goes and zug, 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 fire comes all around. So what really is this? So there is a material reality of Agni and we can study it. We can understand the properties of the fire and deal accordingly. But where does the fire come from? So there is a fire god. There are several, first of all, miniature fire creating agencies. And then beyond them, there is the fire god. And the fire god himself, he is an aspect of the Lord. Because it described that from that great Purusha, fire was in his mouth. It emerged from the mouth. So there is a whole connection between this fire and the fire in its origin. Therefore, that fire becomes the original fire which has built the worlds. Otherwise, it makes no sense. This fire is not building the worlds, it is destroying the world. Fire is known as Jata Vedas, the one which knows all the births. Fire is also known to sublimate everything. So this connection between this material fire and even materially one will find certain connections. And there are so many stories. For instance, Ganga. So when you go to Ganga, one is Ganga purifies you. Sometimes people say, if you know, Ganga itself is so dirty. So you say, yes, because he is purifying us. We are casting our dirt. There is a story which where Ganga goes and says, what do I do with my dirt? So you know, you have the origin of the other Ganga. Narmada carries that dirt inside her. And then there is a Ganga which is in the Dakshin Ganga. Kaveri is Dakshin Ganga. Rishi Agastya brings. But this is not the only Ganga. Ganga is also has a celestial origin. So celestial origin is she has come from, you know, the Kamandalu of Brahma, where he has caught it as it arose in the heart of Vishnu. It arose in the heart of Vishnu because Shiva is dancing. And what is that Ganga in the one? It's the purifying power of the divine. So you, with this connection in Indian thought, there was always a tendency to make the link. And that's what gave meaning to the culture. Why cow is sacred? So many, we could just go on. Nag Panchami we had recently. So everything on earth, there is a link. And if you find the link, this ignorance is climbing towards knowledge. Ultimately, it goes to the one. He is the one who holds the secret. So in the one, that force takes the form of Shiva. His force. And with Shiva, that force takes the form of his vahan, which is bull. Nandi, powerful. It's not cow like Krishna's fruit. Nandi. And then the gana of Shiva. So slowly that power which is working in existence, which is there in the already in Sachidanand as the force, ultimately manifest as Shiva and then as, you know, Nandi and then subsequently all these things which we see, destructive power, all kinds of, it'll become Rudra in lower creation, the power that destroys, Poseidon in the Greek mythology. So this is how the whole hierarchy. So, but when we don't know the subtle world, when we don't know the link with the one consciousness, then there is a problem. This is there and that is there. And then you discard this soul reality. This is how it has happened, or you deal with it practically. But when we look at Sri Aurobindo, very interestingly, in every field, he brings in that higher dimension and the highest dimension. And I often remind, we have so much to learn always. In the nursing home, the mother gave a message. I think some of us are aware of it. The message is, finally, it is faith that cures. But that's not the only end of the story. She wrote it in big letters. If you read that message, it's not like finally it is faith that cures. Big letters. And it is not only written well, very well framed, put up. But we go on multiplying our faith in medicine. This is the link which we have to make through yoga. And not only with medicine, every field we see. That every field you will see a particular god who is the subtle realm, and beyond that all these gods will belong to one particular group of beings, and then they will belong to one particular deity and main deity, then that one reality. That's how we have the 33 crore Devi Devatas. For everything, and there is a beautiful interconnectedness. So there is on one side knowledge of the one, and the other side ignorance, multiplicity. But India has always tried to also understand the links, subtle links between ignorance and knowledge, because the second thing which comes before we begin to further go into the chapter, are they static fields? Is their ignorance fixed forever in ignorance? Then there are the deities who will help you, or whatever way people go to deities to seek help. And then there is the one divine. Or human consciousness can move from ignorance to knowledge. So we have the famous Brihadaranyak, Asadoma Sadgamya Tamasoma Jyotirgamya Mrityurma Amritam Gamya. This is the second layer. It's in dynamic motion. Third layer of meaning. Okay, it gives the sense of Asado to Sadgamya, Tamaso to Jyotiri. This is the realm, this will remain Tamas. But there is the Jyoti, and you can move towards the Jyotiri. This is the anomaly. Okay, fine, there is a, you can climb from here. There is a dynamic, but this will remain forever, this. Now comes the another third layer of meaning, which is there in the Vedas, but we'll come to it at some point of time. Asado ma Sadgamya, lead us to the truth hidden in the core of falsehood. Asado ma Sadgamya, Tamaso ma Jyotirgamya, light which is hidden in the darkness. Mrityor ma Amritam Gamya, the seed of immortality which is hidden in the cape of mortality. And this is the story of the Marthand. And it's very interesting, symbolic, I feel. Many things are symbolic. We visited the Marthand temple and saw the destruction. See, Marthand is the eighth son of Aditi. And what she does, she casts this son into the womb of darkness. Even materially, earth has come from the sun, and sun is in the core. Actually, the earth's core is tremendously hot. I don't remember the temperature, probably 4000 degrees centigrade or whatever. Very hot. Extremely hot. So there is in the core the hidden sun. And this hidden sun is emerging through struggle. So Marthand is a warrior god. And it is emerging, struggling against the darkness. It's the only sun which fights against the darkness. All others are celestial ones. They are cheers, helping. But he is struggling against the darkness, and it is prophesied that he will emerge one day. Now, actually, very interestingly, when you see, even historically, what was the thriving Indian civilization in Kashmir, where all these Shaiv, Vaishnava, Tantra, Buddhism, even mystic Christianity were all thriving. See, first thing that is attacked by the invasions, when you read, Babur Akbar came later. But first what is attacked and destroyed, read it historically. One is they came, the Ghazni came toward this side, and the other, I think 1300 BC or something, was Surya Marthand temple. And it was protected by a very powerful king, King Lalita Aditya. And then the next generation and the next generation. Then there was this attack and he lost. And it was like the occult attack on this very principle of truth emerging from the darkness. And after that you see shadow falls over India. And now the rejuvenation and ultimately entering into an age where 370 is removed. It's a spiritual act. It's not about just reclaiming a territory. It's a spiritual act because you are reclaiming, you are once again making the Murti whole. That's what we understand when Mother makes the spiritual map of India complete. Otherwise somebody will say, what is there? This is Maya. Why we get involved into making the spiritual India, united India, Akhanda Bharat? How does it matter? It's all Maya. No, Maya is the Lord is expressing himself, manifesting himself, but there are things that distort here, and as a result of the distortion, creation becomes what it has become. So this is the third sense, that there is a hidden Son of Truth hidden in all of us, and that Son of Truth must emerge, and this is the ultimately supramental victory. But all that Sri Aurobindo will take us little by little, step by step. He is a wonderful teacher, teaching, you know, like mama teaching us by the finger. And some people say, why so many long sentences in Life Divine? Because we are babies. So everything, so that we don't miss anything. So we'll come to page 500. Where did we stop? We stopped at page 501. Okay. I'll read again. The lower is for us the first condition of the higher. The darkness is the dense body of the light. This is what we had stopped. The darkness. So that means what? All of us have hope. It's not just about going from here to there. This itself will change. The inconscient guards in itself all the concealed superconscient. This is Mother's experience, that when the supramental light descends, it went into the inconscient. And then she gave a message of that, that at the very bottom, 1959 New Year message, at the very bottom of the inconscient. And its history is very interesting. She saw that she is revealing profound truths. But everybody around, all of us, samples, chit-chatting, sitting like this, sleeping, dozing. You see, there is a reason why after 58, Mother stopped coming to the playground, because of this. She wondered, what is happening to these people? Why are they not interested? So she went inside the consciousness. This is an experience she describes. And at the end, she discovered that inconscient, which has a strong grip. And then she had this wonderful message. This message connects with this. At the very bottom of the inconscience, most stifling. So it's absolutely, she goes, passes into, and what does she discover? The seeds of the new creation. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says in the Mother, this new creation is taking place in two ways, which is very fascinating. In the Mother, chapter 1, a fixed and unfailing aspiration which calls from below. And there is also the pressure of the divine grace from above. So we are not left, no chance of continuing with ignorance forever. Because it's two way. Human beings are being pressed by the light from above and from below. So it's just a question of how much time we take to yield. So this is what we had read. The powers of the division and falsehood hold from us, but also for us, and to be conquered from them, the riches and substance of the unity and the truth in their cave of subconscious. And several, we have the legend of Agastya Rishi, that, you know, Indra has to conquer. Panis have caught the riches and kept it inside the caves. And then Sarma, the intuition goddess, she goes there. The heavenly hound, she goes there and she tries to tell them, win them over, come out, release the cows. And these same Odysseus, there was something like that. So they say, no, no, we are not going to release. You join us. We have all the riches. We are the fellows who will ultimately help you. She tries. There is a whole dialogue. This is given in the Vedas. Then she goes back. And then now they are hidden in the waters, the caves are hidden. So Agastya Rishi drinks the ocean, and then the caves are destroyed by the Vajra of Indra, and then they come out, all these cows are released. So there are secret riches held in our subconscious. That's why the process is long. It's not about annihilating things. The cows have to be released. And that's why each victory won there is something tremendous. Not only for us, but for the world. This was their view expressed in the highly figured enigmatic language of the early mystics. The sense and justification of man's actual existence and his conscious or unconscious Godward effort. So this was given to man that you have to conquer these things. You are the media. That's why the Devasur Sangram, where human beings joined the war. So this we had read. Now comes the for, as a matter of fact, while the very keyword of the ideal existence, creation, is a plenary self-consciousness and self-possession in the infinite soul and a perfect oneness, the key word of the creation of which we here present experience is the very opposite. This is now the real problem. That plenary supramental creation means not only you are aware of the self, but the self as it is in everything and everywhere. But here we are not even aware of ourselves. So this is the state in which we are. And then very beautiful. Just read the last line. The self-conscious being to possess in force developing in life into a struggle of the self-conscious being to possess himself and all things and to establish in the kingdom of this unseeing mechanic force the reign of an enlightened will and knowledge. What is the unseeing force? Everywhere. All the reflexes, physical movements, habitual movements. This is not to be discarded. The rule of the divine consciousness has to be established here. Very challenging. So that even a twitch of a muscle should be divine. Is it possible? Well, once I watched in Ames, they had a program. I was there just as one of the plenary speakers. And they had the program by the Kathak master. So none other but the legendary Birju Maharaj, and he is dancing, and at the end he said a few words. My take home point was very, he said the ideal dancer is he who by the twitch of a muscle, you know, he described that each ghungru in the palm is having 70 little tantan, whatever, khanak. He said the ideal dancer, when do you know that somebody has the perfect mastery? When he can twitch just the muscle needed for one ghungru to make a sound. I said, my God, this is perfection. Even the twitch of a muscle. Everything should be under the master's, divine master's control. And that's extremely difficult. We can understand. So this is the work before us. And because the blind mechanic force, we know now really that it is no such thing, confronts us everywhere. Why is he saying no such thing? Because it acts as if it knows everything. You touch heat and your body will react instantly, finger will react. Is it just a mechanic force? Look at the way instincts act. So there is behind this mechanic force an intelligence limiting itself in that domain. Domain specific, whatever it's called, intelligence, no? Nowadays, computer may. So, domain specific. But it acts perfectly. So, he says there is no such thing. Confronts us everywhere. Initial, omnipresent, the fundamental law, the great total energy. And because the only enlightened will we know, our own, appears as a subsequent phenomenon, a result, a partial, subordinate, circumscribed, sporadic energy, the struggle seems to us at the best very precarious and doubtful venture. Classic example is, even today, you'll see people now, many videos will come on, knowledge of diet. this you should eat, that you shouldn't eat, this, do that, do. If you hear all of them, you'll be much more confused. At the end, many of them are discovering actually whatever grandmother prescribed was the best. I can give several examples, like diet in Kerala. Coconut oil is used in southern parts of India. Heart disease is not more. Ideally, it should be more. It's very interesting. There are a number of examples. If you go to Rajasthan, same thing. Ghee and chili, this combination. Now, why this diet? There is a kind of intuitive sense through which all these things have emerged. Now, our mental knowledge doesn't work, doesn't operate, especially if it's an American knowledge. Because there, they don't know about evolution. They have just read the chemicals, and on top of it, they have issues like money. So when I go travel, I find it very difficult. So many children are having gluten allergy. They can't eat wheat. I say, kya? We never knew, no? Wheat, chapati, cooking. Allergy, why? Then you go to GM food and then you go to all kinds of things. It's very fascinating. How mental knowledge is much less to an intuitive knowledge which develops in a civilization. And that's where he says the difference is so much. The inconscient to our perception is the beginning and the end. The self-conscious soul seems hardly more than a temporary accident, a fragile blossom upon this great, dark and monstrous aswath tree of the universe. And then he says, next passage, if this view of things had a complete validity, if this was true, that, well, this is what it is, mental knowledge, and there is ultimately a supreme knowledge, then only the absolute idealist, sent perhaps out of some higher existence, unable to forget his mission, stung into indomitable enthusiasm by a divine estrus, or sustained in a calm and infinite fortitude by the light and force and voice of the unseen Godhead, could persist under such circumstances in holding up before himself, much more before an incredulous or doubting world, the hope of a full success for the human endeavor. Now, this passage should go into Sri Aurobindo's biography. Who is this absolute idealist? Who is holding? How does Sri Aurobindo know that there is an idealist like that? It's his own experience. See, actually, from every book you can, like, Live Divine, there are several passages where very clearly are impossible to write unless you have an experience. Whose experience is this? Where he says, if this view of things had a complete validity, that if is very interesting qualifier, then only the absolute idealist, sent perhaps out of some higher existence, unable to forget his mission. And what is the mission? That he will continue to extract light out of the realm of darkness. And there are three options otherwise. The consistent materialist seeks a partial and short-lived power, knowledge, happiness, so much only as the dominant, inconscient order of nature will allow to the struggling self-consciousness of man if he accepts his limitations. So materialist says, why all these crack brain fellows? We'll take some knowledge, some power, use it. After some time, we will die, creation will end, it's okay, why bother about it? Then the next is the religionist seeks his reign of enlightened will, love or divine being, his kingdom of God in that other world where they are unalloyed and eternal. Here it will be like this. But after death, we'll go to Kailash, Vaikuntha. There everything is fine. In Vaikuntha there is no maramari. No, you will get everything. Everybody gets nice cheer sagar after all, you know. And who is Ma Lakshmi is making, preparing kheer. There also kheer is prepared. Mata Parvati. But here you have to jhelo somehow. The philosophic mystic rejects all as a mental illusion and aspires to self-extinction in some nirvana. The other three options. Maheshwarji would tell it like a story. That once Durvasa Rishi comes to Vrindavan and all these people are sitting. And he suddenly sees baby Krishna and recognizes, oh, he has come here. So he has a mental conversation with him. So, Tod du bhanda, shall I reveal your secret? So Krishna communicates, baby Krishna. You speak whatever you want to speak. They will understand what I want them to understand. Okay. So people had the obvious question. Rishigan bataiye, Kans ka rajya kab khatam hoga? When will reign of Kansa? And this is the only problem. Like we have sometimes this kind of problem. When will this America-Iran war end? When will China? All this? We have that question. So he gave an answer. He said, okay, you have given me sanction, I will say. He says, when a baby will lift a mountain, then you must know that the time has come for Kansa's reign to end. Then he goes away. Now they are all wondering. So the materialist says, it means, look here, it is an impossible thing. Why? Because no baby can ever lift Govardhan Giridhari. It is an impossibility. It was a decent way of saying, forget all this, pay the taxes, forget. You know, there will be no change. The religionist group, the second group, is it basically what even when maybe I believe in heaven you can do this. Little babies can lift a mountain. So it means when you are alive, this won't happen. When you are dead, it is possible. You will go to heaven, do good deeds, go to heaven, there you can lift. Then there is third group where one baby tells, Mama, I won't go to school from tomorrow. And I want extra share of ghee, makhan. He says, why? What happened? Didn't you hear? A baby. He says, so? Maybe I am that baby. Sri Aurobindo's disciples. We have to put only a lathi. That too is giving us the privilege. He is lifting the mountain. But so that we also feel we are doing something, no? So he gives us a lathi. And all of us feel, I am an instrument. But he is holding the mountain with a little finger. So this is the three options. And he says, if this is the complete validity. But still, since there are these two sides of existence, knowledge and ignorance, that is to say, the ignorance of nature and the light of the spirit, and since there is behind them the one reality, the reconciliation, or at any rate the bridging of the gulf forecast in the mystic parable of the Vedas ought to be possible. So we have these mystic parables of heaven and earth being one. The oldest mystic parable is that they are one. Actually, it again in material science we'll see the same thing. It's a nebula. So how does the nebula, so many stars and then ultimately sun, the giant nebula for our solar system, out of which all these planets come out, earth comes out. So we all ultimately come out of that. So a mystic parable is that in the beginning heaven and earth are one. So now there is no space for anything. Creation has to take place. This is a command. So all the gods don't know what to do. So Indra comes in and the other gods come. They struggle. They finally separate. So there are celestial beings which come in between. So earth and heaven get separated by the antariksh. But because they have a unity, they are always seeking towards each other. In Savitri, toward the end, this line comes. Earth is always lifting its hands towards heaven and heaven is always leaning towards earth. And this was the mystic parable which about heaven and earth growing equal and one, because in their origin they are one. So this is where the indication is all creation started from that one reality. Therefore it is bound to eventually express that reality. But the mystic parable he is referring to is this one. The other mystic parables also, but this is the one which is being referred to straight away. It is a keen sense of this possibility which has taken different shapes and persisted through the centuries. The perfectibility of man. The perfectibility of society. Jagannath Rath is the classic example. Every year they have a... What is Jagannath Rath? Step one. God is stepping out. Stepping out where? Into the midst of common man. This one part of the parable. And everybody is involved in that in a success effort, which is a beautiful collective effort where there is no big or small, equality. There is equanimity, equality, and there is fraternity. Because why? We are all together with Jai Jagannath. That's it. There is no say, main Brahman bol raha hu Jai Jagannath, main Shudra bol raha hu Jai Jagannath. No. Jai Jagannath. That is the only thing. So there is this second part of the mystic parable. That there is equality, there is fraternity, because all of us are there like that. And then that's how there is a freedom. That is the third part of it, liberation. Liberation from all that shackles us. Why? What is the freedom there? We all now realize ourselves that we are children of Jagannath. So there are several parables in India of a perfect society. And Shubindu's, that there will be a time when this perfect society will manifest upon earth. It has not yet happened till date. So we only remember it for 7 days. 7 days it happens. After that, Brahmins goes back to his own Brahman and Shudra to his own job. They all forget the oneness. But this is the parable. So there are several such things. Perfectibility of society in the Western world also. Plato's, if you read Plato's Republic, he's talked about the perfect society. The Alvar's vision of the descent of Vishnu and the gods upon earth, we read that yesterday. The reign of the saints, Sadunam Rajyam, the city of God, dreamed by Shelley, the mystic poet, the city of God upon earth, the reign of the saints, the city of God, the millennium, the new heaven and earth of the apocalypse. So apocalypse, we know, is the Christian myth about the mass destruction of this creation, like our Pralaya, and everything will be destroyed. There will be Armageddon, the last battle between the forces of light and darkness. But at the end, after the clearing takes place, there will be new earth and a new heaven. The same, just like we have Pralaya and the Satyug coming. It's the same thing, but in a different language. So all these are indicating that there is a future of earth. But the mainstream thought has taken hold by the mind, by the Mayavad. Because that's easier, that's convenient. It's much easier to say all this is Maya and sit in meditation. At least mera to ho jayega. I will go into Nirvana or Moksha. Baki sab ka Bhagwan dekhenge apne hisab se. Wo to kaal mein phasa hua hai. I used to have a little songs, one line. Then people would say, now, not now, but earlier when I would hear. So a line that used to come to me was from a film called Chalti Ka Naam Gaadi. You say what I have to say. I say, we are all saying like that fellow, Tera hua, mannu mera kya hoga. Tumhari mukti ho gayi, hamara kya hoga? Bhai, tum bhi karo. That's unfair, you know. That's very unfair. That's how it is told. Yeah, hum to chale, hamara to mukti. And people are so happy with this idea that we are going to go moksha. Not once, and mother uses the word, this is an illusion of a kind of mystic illusion. And Buddha also speaks about it. At bottom, it is so selfish. I'll be liberated. Baki abhai. Even a sense of superiority, huh? Dekho. Tuch log. So, poor fellows. So he says, but the grace certitude is not so certain. But human beings have flip-flopped between these two states. And therefore, at the end, Shubindu says, but these intuitions have lacked the basis of assured knowledge. And the mind of man has remained swinging between a bright future hope and a grey present certitude. So what is the bright future hope? There are people who will say that Christ will come down again, there will be kingdom of heaven. Same. Like we wait for Kalki Avatar. Kalki Avatar has come, done and gone. We are still waiting for Kalki Avatar. There are already 6 or 8. Six are already here. More are going to come. So there is a, you know, maybe one day. The other is grace attitude. Because when you read, haan ek din hoga, but when you look at it, the world around, you say, pata nahi kab hoga. So, grace attitude. People sometimes ask this question. Sri Aurobindo said this. Re, kab hoga? Kya hoga? Hey, bhai, thoda wait kar lo. Kitna saal lagega? Are, maza hai ab unka kaam, kaam mein lage raho. Kitna joy diya hai tumko. So, this is the way human thought swings. We have seen that there can be and is a perfectly rational basis for the hope of our victory. For the lower term of being in which we now live contains in itself the principle and intention of that which exceeds it, and it is by its own self-exceeding and transformation into that that it can find and develop into a complete form its own real essence. One simple example we can take of love. The lower form of love, where we keep changing the other person. But this is a higher form of love, where you discover you have to change yourself. Change yourself in what sense? Not in terms of that, you know, become more adjusting, more accommodating. That's one thing. Can a truer and deeper love emerge into my heart? Now, this is very challenging. It's the same principle, same love. And Savitri describes it so beautifully that, and love that was once animals wants, then a sweet madness in the rapturous heart, then an ardent comradeship in the mind. See, this is very mature love. When people don't want all that vital, funny things, but they want a mental companionship. And beyond that, a spiritual togetherness. See what forms of love are there. And then the whole world is taken together. The principle is the same, love, but it undergoes progressive transformation. So this is the hope before us. Few more lines, then we'll stop. But there is one point in the reasoning which till now we have left somewhat obscure, and it is precisely in this matter of the coexistence of the knowledge and the ignorance. So what really is the ignorance? Ignorance is when we, and that is beautifully defined here, we'll just read that. But mind also is a universal principle, is one, is Brahman, and therefore it has a tendency to a unifying and universalizing knowledge as well as to that which marks off and particularizes. Mind wants, all developed mind wants unity, want harmony, and they try all kinds of ways and means. Because this is there, but also it is unable to. So both aspects are there in the mind. The particularizing faculty of mind only becomes ignorance. So how ignorance comes? When it separates itself from the higher principles of which it is a power and acts not only with its characteristic tendency, but also with a tendency to exclude the rest of knowledge. We can take the ashram as a living example. So as long as we remember all departments, they are all mother's department. In the department, sub-departments, mothers. Each person, mothers. There will be unity and harmony. The moment you think I am smarter than the other, when you remove the M and make it other, then there will be fight. I know better. How do you know? Who are you? Then departments will fight. Then everybody will fight because you have lost the core. That's what is the story where once there was a lot of fighting going on in the monastery. We'll just read this last sentence and the story and then we'll stop. This exclusiveness is the very soul of ignorance. You have to particularize. Particularize means if I have to do my work, I have to do my work, whatever I may be doing. That's particularizing. But my core should always be intact. But if I exclude everything else and only particularize and forget, then there is a separativeness. This is the basic difference. So the story goes that one of the ashrams was not doing well, and people who used to come stopped coming. They stopped giving donations, everything. I mean, it went through a very difficult phase. Once the four head priests, the only people who remained, four or five, so they didn't know what to do. So they said, there is a yogi up there. Let's go and meet him. So finally they had the humility to go. Said, okay, we don't know. Please tell us what to do. So he said, okay, I'll tell, but in each one's ears, don't share it with the other person, what I am saying. So he says to each one some secret formula of truth. They come back. Somehow everything begins to change. People start coming. Money starts coming. Everything begins to prosper. So they are wondering what has happened. So one day they say, let's compare the notes. What did he say? After all, I know what he told to me, but what he told you, what he told to you. Now everything is good, so we can share. So they sit together and start sharing. So he told the same thing to all of them. One of you, one among you is Krishna. Now, maybe this fellow is Krishna. Should I shout at him? Should I be angry at him? Should I condemn him? No. Maybe. Or maybe he is Krishna. So what is the secret formula? This is the secret formula. All are mother's children. Mother is in all. There is a little story of the mother with which we will stop. The human wife went to mother. Mother, there are so many people who don't do work, who are this, that, and I think they should not be here, and you know, you can. She told, get the list. Made a list of 25 persons. So he starts seeing, she started seeing, say, no, this person is, this is okay, this good, this party, this does good. Ultimately came to the last person. Now he knows what mother will find something, but he's waiting. So he says, oh, he fixes stamps, isn't it? Yes, mother. See how nicely he fixes the stamps. Well, it's a lesson. Each one has. The whole evil of the world is things are not in the right place. That's how the mother explains it. Put it in its right place, you have solved the puzzle. But if it's in the wrong place, but even there, if you remember, at least, that we are all her children, we are all here to do the same beautiful work, and that work is building the new creation, what a work. Not working in medical and Shabda or dining room, but we are all here to build the new creation. Our life will be so full of joy, enthusiasm, unity, harmony, and everything else. So we'll stop here and come back after 10 minutes. Chema.